taken our thoughts from chapters 13 through 16, which is the account of Jesus with the 12 on the night of his arrest and betrayal. And in these chapters, Jesus is instructing, he is commanding, he is encouraging them, all in view of the fact that he was going to leave them and go to the cross to be crucified. In these chapters, 13 through 16, he spoke to them concerning a variety of matters. You'll see the phrase, "I say unto you," or "I say to you," 7 times in chapters 13 through 16. So it was a personal message to them. And of these 7 times that you find that phrase, he emphasizes the truth of what he said by saying, "Verily, verily, I say unto you." And he said that 5 times. Twice he says, "I tell you." And in John 16 and verse 7, he says, "I tell you the truth." So he says, "I say unto you," and he emphasizes to them that he is speaking to them truth. "I tell you," and again he emphasizes that what he is saying to them is truth. They needed to be absolutely convinced that what he was saying was truth. It's no different today. God's people need to be absolutely 100%, no doubt at all, that when the Lord speaks, he speaks truth. It's not something that is left up to us to determine the validity. Everything he says is truth. And I don't think he emphasized that he was speaking truth because they didn't believe him. But he was emphasizing that, again, to show the importance that we have to be absolutely convinced that this is true. This is true. He also calls upon them to remember what he said unto them. Notice in John 15, verse 20, he says, "Remember the word that I said unto you." Remember. John 16, verse 4, "But these things I have told you, that when the time shall come," that is, for him to go away, for Peter to deny him, and for the crucifixion, "that you may remember that I told you of them." He says, "So I say unto you," 7 times, "I say unto, verily, verily, I say unto you," emphasizing the truth of what he said. And then he says, "Remember. Remember what I've told you." That means they were to recall what he said to them. It means that they were to think upon what he said to them. They were to retain it in their minds. They were to be mindful of it. They were to take it into account, everything he said to them. And again, oh, how we need to remember his words. Be absolutely convinced of their truth and always be mindful of what he says. Now, I'd like to read three verses to establish the main thought. In John 15, verse 11, "These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full." John 16, verse 1, "These things have I spoken unto you, that ye should not be offended." Verse 33 of John 16, "These things I have spoken unto you, that ye might have peace." So you notice that in each of those three verses, you read that phrase, "These things I have spoken unto you, that." And then, of course, something has to follow. That simply meaning in order. In order. So these three verses, in the strict context, refer to something specific. Something that went before, something specific, in the strict context. But I believe that they are each true regarding everything that Jesus told them that evening. They are true regarding everything that the Lord tells us. "These things I have spoken unto you, that." So there's a purpose. There's a purpose. Now, as you read those three verses, you see that Jesus had in mind their well-being in this life. That is always so. Jesus always has in mind the well-being of his children. What he said was for the purpose of their well-being. In other words, it was for their benefit. Therefore, what he told them was spiritual. And as you read John 13 through 16, that's very obvious. He is speaking to them things of a spiritual nature, which are beneficial, which would be beneficial to them, and which are beneficial to us. So I want to speak tonight on the significance and the purpose of Christ's words, of the words of Jesus Christ. First of all, consider again the verses that we just read, the three. The personal benefits of what the Lord says to us. In those three text verses, Jesus spoke of his joy in us. He says, "I tell you these things that my joy would be in you." Now, that's no ordinary joy. His joy. And that our joy would be full. He says, "I tell you these things," John 15, 11, "that my joy might remain in you." In order that my joy remain in you. So it's possible, just from that statement, for us not to possess his joy. So he tells us these things that his joy would remain in us. So what is his joy? Well, it's his delight, his pleasure. And what is the thing that he delighted the most in? To do the will the Father. But he's talking about the very joy of Jesus Christ. This is not just mere happiness. This is his joy. That is, he's the author of it. He's the object of it. He's the ground of it. He's the matter of it. It is the very joy of Christ in us. And then that becomes our joy. And then that joy is to be full. He says, I tell you these things so that this will take place. In chapter 16, verse 1, we see he speaks of strength. I have spoken unto you that ye might not be offended. That is, that you might not stumble, that you might not fall. In other words, that you would be strengthened and fortified and bolstered in your spirituality. He says, I tell you these things for this reason. And then in John 16:33, he speaks of, I speak these things unto you that you might have peace. You're not going to have this peace from the world. So I tell you these things that you can have peace, that you can be delivered from fear, that you can be delivered from confusion, that you can be delivered from fretfulness and anxiety, and that you could have inward comfort and inward assurance. I tell you these things so that you can have this peace. So he's looking out after their benefit, their well-being. So let's look at some of the things that Jesus said to them that night. And these things, of course, would result in joy, his joy, strength, and peace. The words of Jesus Christ. And we're to remember these words. In John 13, verse 8, he spoke to Peter about the need to have his feet washed for fellowship with him. Peter said unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. If I do not cleanse you in your daily walk, that's what the feet symbolize. If I do not cleanse you in your daily walk, you have no part with me. That is, you can have no fellowship with me. So what the Lord is telling him is everything that would interfere, doesn't matter what it is. Everything that interferes, everything that robs us of fellowship with him must be cleansed. Now, he doesn't say that to be mean. He tells us that we could have the very joy of Christ and that joy would be full in us. He tells us that so we could have strength, that we will not stumble. And he tells us that we can have inward comfort and assurance. Also, after Christ in John 13, after Christ used himself as an object lesson of what it is to stoop and serve, notice what he said, verse 12 through verse 17. So after he had washed their feet and taken his garments and was sat down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done to you? It's more than just washing their feet. He's saying you need to grasp what I have just done. I have stooped to serve. Know what I have done unto you. Verse 13, ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye also ought to wash one another's feet. The emphasis here really is not washing the feet. The emphasis is on stooping to serve. Stooping to serve. For I have given you an example that ye should do as I have done to you. That's always good advice, that we should do even as the Lord has done to us. Verily, verily, again, he's emphasizing what I'm saying is true. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. There's not a lot of people that really believe that. The servant is not greater than his Lord. Neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, now this is more than if you hear what I'm saying. He says, if ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. So what Jesus is telling them is you need to, each and every one of you need to take the position and have the attitude of a servant. I, who am Lord and Master, was willing to stoop and wash your dirty feet. Know what I have done unto you. He's telling them that you need to have the heart. You need to have the mindset of a willing servant in all your life, in every aspect, in every circumstance. And he used himself as an example. He's instructing them to be ready to serve. No one else that was in that room that night was ready to wash the feet but him. He was ready to serve. He was willing to stoop and serve. And his service was a priority. He said these things to them, why? That his joy would be in them. The one who takes the position of a willing servant and is willing to stoop to serve has the joy of Christ in them. It becomes their joy, and that joy becomes full. John 15:11. He's telling them these things that they would have strength of heart, so that they would not faint, that they would not be offended, that they would not stumble. He's saying, serve, serve. There's strength in serving the Lord. And he's telling them these things that they might have peace, that they might have comfort, that they might have assurance. There's peace in being a ready and willing servant of the Lord. Prior to John chapter 14, Jesus had told them there in chapter 13 that he was leaving them. Now this shouldn't have shocked them, but it did, because he had really told them, Matthew 16, he had told them prior that he was leaving, that he must needs go to Jerusalem. And several other times he told them. But this night it really hit them. It's like they heard it for the first time. So he tells them, I am leaving. But he also tells them that one of them, one of the 12, would betray him. that being Judas. And he also said that Peter, who in some ways was the strongest, in some ways he wasn't, but that Peter would deny him three times, and that Jesus would lay down his life, that he would be crucified. The result of that is the apostles become very confused. They're agitated. They're very alarmed. They're fearful. They're anxious. They're distressed. There was a great inward commotion going on in their heart. All peace and joy had evaporated. And then in John 14, verse 1, we hear Jesus say, "Let not your heart be troubled." Let not your heart be troubled. Now, there's a lot in those words. It's not our point to dig into them this evening, but there's a lot there. Let not your heart be troubled. It's something we prevent. Let not your heart be troubled. Now, there are many troubles and there are many difficulties that we cannot avoid, that we cannot escape. But heart trouble is not one of them. We allow our hearts to be troubled. That's something we allow to happen. And that's why he said, let not. Don't do that. Let not your heart be troubled. Why? Why is he telling them all these things? He's telling them so that they could have joy. He's telling them that so they can have strength. He's telling them so that they can have peace. And what does a troubled heart do? Well, it robs us of joy. It robs us of strength, and it most certainly robs us of peace. So he says, let not your heart be troubled. They had already allowed that. They were all of them were sitting there, and their hearts were filled with commotion. And Jesus is telling them, let not your heart be fearful. Let not your heart be anxious and in a distressed state. Do not allow your spirit to be cast down. Now, it's true, there's troubles we can't avoid, but our spirit does not have to be cast down. That's something we allow. That's something that happens because we fail to do something. Do not allow your mind to be pulled away. Let not your heart be troubled. And someone says, well, that's easy to say. But then he tells us how to do it, how to prevent our heart from being troubled. He says, believe in God. Believe also in me. Remember, he emphasized truth. And now he says, belief. I'm telling you the truth. Believe. That is, be absolutely persuaded in me. Place your confidence in me. Be assured in me. Lean upon me. Trust in me. Be committed to me. Believe. That's how we prevent our heart from being troubled. But we must have something to believe. And what are we to believe? Him. Everything he says to us. And there's fullness of joy, there's strength, there's peace, there's comfort, there's assurance when we believe in God. Now, many times we need to measure our faith. We need to measure, to what degree am I believing? Well, if our heart is filled with trouble, not to a very great degree. Let not your heart be troubled. Believe. He also speaks words of encouragement. In verses 2 and 3, he says, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you." Again, he's saying, "I tell you nothing but the truth. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also." So in those words, he's revealing his plan. He doesn't get to the specifics of it. He doesn't say when he's coming back. Doesn't say exactly to the minute detail what he's preparing for them. He gives them a general plan. And the Lord does the same thing with you and I. And there's joy there. When we remember that, there's joy. There's strength. There's peace. He also speaks of his person. John 14, verse 6, he says, "I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life." There is a way, there is truth, and there is life, and I'm it, is what Jesus says. We need to remember that, because there's joy there. There's strength there. There's peace there. He also tells them or speaks to them some promises. Verses 13 and 14, he gives them a promise concerning prayer. Verse 16 and 17, he gives a promise concerning something he will do. He says, "I will pray the Father. He shall give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever." He says, "I'm leaving, but I'm not leaving you comfortless. I'm going to send another comforter, even the Spirit of Truth, whom the world can't receive. But because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him, but ye know him, for he dwelleth with you, shall be in you." So he gives promises. There's fullness of joy when we believe the promise. There's strength in believing the promises. There's peace in believing the promises. And he continues on there through verse 20. And then in verse 27, he says, "Peace I leave you. My peace. I leave you with peace." But he does something even better than that. He says, "My peace." There's no greater peace. Just like he said that my joy might be in you. There's no greater joy than his joy. There's no greater peace than his peace. That my peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth. Not as the world giveth I give unto you. And then he repeats, "Let not your heart be troubled. Neither let it be afraid." And how do we do that? Believe. So he tells them these things, and then he basically says, "Believe what I'm telling you. You got to believe what I'm telling you." Because there's joy there. Not just any joy, his joy. There's strength there. Not just any strength, his strength. There's peace. Not just any peace, his peace. So all the benefits of the words of Christ. And that's why he tells them, "Remember. Remember what I've said to you. Don't let these things slip from your mind." See, that's what we do. We cram our minds full with the junk of the world, the activities of the world. And there's only so much room up here. And we forget what Christ has said. And then we allow our hearts to be troubled. He also speaks to them about obedience. In verse 15, he says, if ye love me. That's the key here. That's the key. It's the motivation. If ye love me, keep my commandments. If ye love me, keep my commandments. Verse 21, he that hath my commandments and keepeth them, he it is that loveth me. And he that loveth me shall be loved of my Father. That is, he experiences, he's able to enjoy the love of God. And I will love him and will manifest myself unto him. You want God to manifest himself unto you? Do what he says. And he manifests. Now, God doesn't just show all truth at once. He may show you one truth. You obey that one truth, and he'll show you a second. You obey that, he'll show you a third. But see, that's where the failure comes in. God shows something we don't obey. Well, and people say, I'm just waiting for the Lord to show me. Well, guess what? He's not going to. He already has. And you ignored it. So the Lord's speaking here of obedience. Verse 23. If a man love me, he will keep my words. And my Father will love him. And we will come unto him. That's fellowship. And make our abode with him. And then verse 10 of John chapter 15, if ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love. So the key here is love in keeping the commandments. Even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. No matter what the circumstance, no matter what the situation, no matter what everybody else is doing, no matter what everybody else has done, no matter what everybody else has said, obey God. There's joy there. There's strength there. There's peace there. When faced with needs, when our life is filled with cares and burdens, when we're faced with difficulties, when we're faced with problems and obstacles, obey God. Just do what God says. Just do what God says. Well, God hasn't told me to do anything yet. Then don't do anything. Don't do anything until he tells you. And then when he tells you, obey. What Jesus is speaking of is an obedience that flows from loving him. And it makes all the difference. An obedience that flows from love. In 1 John 5, verse 3, it tells us that if we love him, then his commandments are not grievous. Because love desires to obey. So this obedience springs from love to God. And there is his joy in this obedience. There is a fullness of joy in this obedience. The happiest people on earth are those who love God and obey God. Now, you can try to obey God without loving God and you'll be miserable. And you can just disobey God and you'll be miserable. But if you love the Lord, and because you love him, you obey. There's joy there. Not ordinary joy, his joy. There's strength. There's peace. John 15, verse 1, he says, I am the vine. I am the true vine. Once again, emphasis upon truth. And my Father is the husbandman. Verse 5, I am the vine. Ye are the branches. I am, ye are. We need to get those two. We need to always keep those two things straight. Who he is and who we are. When you get those mixed up, you're in a bad spot. I am the vine, ye are the branches. The branches aren't the vine aren't the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me ye can do nothing. What he's telling them there is, I am sufficient. I am sufficient. I am everything you need. And when we remember that truth, and we need to remember it all the time, he's everything I need. When you start to get your eyes on, if I can just get this, I'll have it made. When that thought process begins in your mind, remember who it is that's sufficient. It's not this. It's him. He's sufficient. There's a fullness of joy in realizing his sufficiency. There's strength in realizing his sufficiency. There's strength in realizing without him I can do nothing. The strength, because if you realize that, you draw from him, you go to him. There's strength. That's why Paul said, when I am weak, then I am strong. When I realize I'm weak, that's when I'm strong. And vice versa. There's peace in realizing the sufficiency of the Lord. And then there in verses 5 through 7, we already read verse 5, but verse 6 says, if a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what you will, and it will be done unto you. So here he's inviting them, he's telling them, you're the branches, I'm the vine. You need to partake of me. You need to draw from me. You need to receive from me. In order to do that, you have to be connected to me. You have to cleave to me. That's abiding. And an abiding in him, he says, I tell you these things that my joy might be in you. There's joy in abiding in Christ. There's strength. I tell you these things that you might not be offended, that you might not stumble. There's strength in abiding in Christ. I tell you these things that you might have peace. There's strength. So everything the Lord is telling them is for their benefit. They think their whole world has just fallen apart because he's leaving. And he's saying, just calm down and listen to what I've got to say. Because there's joy, there's strength, there's peace. And then in John 13, verse 34 and 35, something else he tells them. He says, a new commandment I give unto you. I imagine when they heard, I'm giving you something new, they probably perked up. People usually do. They like something new. It really isn't new. But a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another. As I have loved you, that ye also love one another. That is, as I have loved you. By this loving one another, as I have loved you. Not just loving one another, but loving one another as Christ has loved us. By this shall men know that ye are my disciples. By this they will know you are different. Because, folks, people don't love this way. People don't naturally love this way. Man is capable of love, but people naturally do not love as Christ loved. Christ loves the unloving. By this shall they know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. He picks this up again in John 15, verse 12. He says, "This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you." They were headed for some rough times. Christ was leaving. Persecution was going to be increasing. He says, you need to love one another. You need to love one another as I have loved you. It's absolutely necessary. Verse 17. These things I command you, that ye love one another. So he tells them, love one another as I have loved you. Not merely love one another, because just saying love one another, that kind of leaves it up to us to define love. And people have some strange ideas about what is love. But he doesn't leave it up to us to define. He says, as I have loved you, that's how you are to love one another. So it speaks of the manner of love that they are to have between themselves. Now you think about the love of Christ, because we're to love as He loved. It's free. No strings attached. No strings attached. It's free. It's also very costly. It's costly. It's compassionate. It's tender. It's bountiful. It's unnatural. It's not in us naturally. In that light, go to Matthew chapter 5. We're almost done. Matthew 5, verse 46. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? In other words, that's natural love. To love someone who loves you, to love someone who's kind to you, to love someone who's good to you. It's just kind of natural to love them back. For if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans the same? The low-down taxpayers do that. He's saying you've got to have something more than that. And that's, of course, in reference to love your enemies. Love your enemies. So we're to love one another. And in doing so, there is the very joy of Christ. And it bubbles over within us. It becomes our joy, and it's full. And there's strength, and there's peace. And then in John chapter 16, the last part of that verse says, be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. Be of good courage. I have overcome the world. He says, what I tell you, remember. Remember that I have overcome the world. Whatever it is that bothers you, remember. I have overcome it. And I have overcome it for you. So again, in John 15, verse 20, in John 16, verse 4, he calls upon us to remember what he has said. And in John 15, verse 11, these things I say unto you, that my joy might remain in you, that your joy would be full. And in John 16, verse 1, these things I say unto you, that you be not offended, that you do not stumble, that you do not fall. we know what they all did fall. Well, not all, but they fled. John remained at the cross. The rest fled. Verse 33, he says, I say these things unto you that you might have peace. So what Jesus tells us is for our own good. We need to believe that. We need to always believe that because it does not always make sense what the Lord tells us. That is to us. But it's what's best for us. It's how we have that joy and that peace, that strength. It's all the significance of the words of the Lord. And that's why we need to study. We need to commit to memory what the Lord says. Because there's a lot of voices out there. And we're kind of bombarded with them every single day. I'll do this. And this will happen. Do this, do this, do this. This is the way to go. And God's people swallow that stuff. They believe it and they become very eager and they pursue those things. Remember what the Lord said. That's where we will find what benefits us the most. That's what will make our life most fulfilling is what the Lord has told us. Just remember what the Lord has said. And if you can do that, always keep in mind what God has said. Someone comes by and they're able to convince a lot of people of just utter foolishness. And in your mind are the words of Christ and you say, I know what he's saying is not true. It's not so. Because it doesn't match up with what the Lord said. So always remember what he says. And isn't it wonderful how amazing it is that he speaks to us. That he has something to say to us. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead